No, I'm just reacting to.
Yeah.
And then the infrastructure planning for some class, not Cornell Tech.
Yeah, Andrea.
Andrea. I was hoping David would ask a question. And I spoke to him about it the other day.
Pretty new, which is good. We like.
All right. No problem.
Only assembly do not have any turnover, and that's not helpful.
We take quite a bit.
That's good.
This is very.
I think.
A lot of.
Represent the campus you need.
Thank you. Oh, no, thank you.
Sure.
It's a real, real change is great.
Yep.
Sure.
Yep, yeah, that's why I tell students.
Hello.
How are you? Good, how are you?
Not too bad.
No, seriously.
Hope I get a chance.
Dragging me in the floor.
It was really enjoyable.
So lucky.
In the morning.
Yes.
My only. Always just.
Long time.
You get to travel a lot, so it's. It's fall, yeah, it's kind of cold.
All right.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
That's right.
What does he get?
He's a geneticist, but he takes the summer.
I know, right?
Especially so.
So when and you keep specializing, there are.
About like how.
You gotta go on risk.
Checking myself.
For him, I'm.
Like August.
I can use.
Yeah.
But it's good.
Oh, I mean, next thing you know, it's gonna be.
Gotta do it.
So good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call our first meeting of the session to order. Welcome to President Pollack, Vice President Opperman, and Vice President Molina for joining us today. As we get kicked off, I'd like to say that our parliamentary procedures will kick off following the president's time with us, and we'll go into our other guest speaker. We're happy to have Maria Wolf here from Talent Development, and she'll be giving a presentation in a little bit. And I'd like to start by saying again, thank you for being here, and to let you know that we have a lot of new faces at the table, and we just had our first, our summer retreat last Friday, getting ourselves organized a little bit, trying to figure out where are some of the priorities that we'd like to look at on behalf of the staff on campus, and to talk about ways that we can collaborate with your office and move forward. So with that, I would like to turn the floor over to you if you have some opening comments.
Yeah,
since there are so many new faces and since we have 45 minutes,
yes.
could we just like name and what you do and what school, just so I can begin to get to know people? Would that be okay?
Absolutely.
My name is Laura Johnson Kelly. I'm starting my third year on the Employee Assembly, and I am the collection manager for the Community Forms and Public Collection in the Department of Middle School Studies. I'm the Library and Museum Representative.
Great, thank you.
My name is Arla Horgan. I'm the representative from the College of Veterinary Medicine, and I manage the PhD program in biomedical sciences. I'm Kate Zufron. I'm the campus community liaison in the Office of Community Relations, and I am the Division of University Relations representative.
Good afternoon. I am Chris Bark. I work at CIT in the Desktop Engineering Department. This is my first year on the EA, and I'm the IT Research and Tech Transfer Agent.
Oh, everybody wants to.
Hi, I'm Christy Mahoney. I'm Director of Facilities with Human Ecology.
Pilar Thompson, I'm the International Rep. I'm the Vice Chair of Operations and Finance. I'm up at the Vet School as the Associate Director of International Affairs and Professional Programs.
I'm Hanya DePew. I'm the less than 5 years of service representative and the Executive Vice Chair. And I'm a Financial Analyst from the College of Human Ecology.
My name is Craig Wiggers. I'm the Veterans Rep at Large, and I'm also the Chair of the Assembly for this session and work in the Department of Physics.
Do you want to go to the back?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm Gina Giambattista, Office of the Assemblies.
Oh, I'm Marina, the President of the Graduate Professional Student Assembly.
What, Mary? Well, everybody knows Mary.
I'm still Mary Opperman.
And for those who don't know me, Joel Molina, Vice President for University Relations. Thank you for your service.
Sure. Just let me know if you're getting to the top.
I am Ann Sieverding. I'm the ILR rep, and I work in International Comparative Labor and the Worker Institute at Cornell.
Hi, my name is Tariq Shams. I am a research support consultant with CALS, and I'm the exempt employee rep.
I am Ellen Miller. I work in research administration at the Weill Institute, and I am non-exempt employee representative.
Yeah. Bruce Robel, second year rep for the Arts and Sciences College. I'm the administrative manager for the Knight Institute, the Department of Anthropology, and the Program of Archaeology.
Lindsay Doolittle from University Communications. I'm the editor of Paw Print, but today I'm here in listening mode.
Hi, I'm David Heiner. I am the LGBTQ plus rep at large, and I'm an applications developer with Human Ecology.
Hi, I'm Adam Howell. I'm the College of Ag and Life Sciences rep, and I work in communications for the Cornell Local Roads Program.
Tanya Grove, Division of Human Resources representative, and I'm an OD consultant in organizational development and talent management.
Karen Leparco, I represent the graduate Johnson Law School, and I work at the Law School in the Office of the Dean.
I'm Andrea Hanlon-Mott. I am the representative for Facilities and Campus Services. I am the ADA coordinator for our division.
Oh, you go first. We're around
oh,
the
I'm
table.
Sorry.
Please.
Okay. I'm Andrew Brooks. I'm a representative at large. I am the facility manager for the College of Veterinary Medicine.
Hi, everyone. Christina Liang. I work in the Office of the Judicial Administrator. I'm just a curious attendee.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Maria Wolf, presenter for today, and I'm from Organizational Development and Talent Management.
Seth Braylor, Senior Director of HR Information Systems, and I'll be presenting with Maria today.
I'm Joe Hall. I'm a reference assistant at the Catherwood Library.
Sarah Palmer, reference collection, Catherwood Library, ILR School, also attending as a curious attendee.
Robert Kenyon, the building manager for Fire College.
Great.
And Pam and Carrie still.
Oh, and Pam Hampton, coordinator of the Office of the Assembly.
Carrie.
Hi. I'm an at-large rep this year, and I am a web product manager for the University Communications Group.
Great. Well, thank you. It's always a really interesting just to hear about the range of jobs that people do. Very broad range of both what you represent and what your jobs are and what school you're from. I want to thank you all. I know that you all have full-time jobs and then you do this on top of it. So that's very much appreciated. I want to welcome you all to the new year. For me, you know, most of the world, spring is when new things happen, but in universities, it's fall. I love the fall. To me, it's a very
it's a time to sort of think again, think anew, set plans that maybe you didn't get in motion last year in motion and so on. So I want to welcome you all to that. I spent a lot of time last year, my first year as president, around meeting faculty, meeting staff, meeting students, going on the road and meeting alumni. And I want to mention in particular this summer two opportunities I had to meet staff. One was back in June, I think it was, when I went to an early morning breakfast at the Palm Road facility to meet with the facilities staff. That was, I did that last year as well. Always a lot of fun. And then many, many thanks to Craig, who a few weeks ago took me on a little tour. Now, obviously, we didn't hit all the staff across campus, but we just dropped in at a bunch of offices. Name down there, Karen, I think. Didn't we drop in on your office? No? I thought we dropped in on your office.
You may very well have.
Yeah. That office was so bad. Anyway, that was great fun, and we should do that again next summer. It's hard to do for me in the year, but the summertime is a great time to do that. I was anyway going to talk a little bit about what I see out this year, what my key priorities are, and then Craig sent me the questions, and that was really one of them. So I'll take this opportunity to answer that question, as it were. It's really helpful for me when I'm thinking about my priorities to always relate them back to the big aspirations, the big goals that I think we as a campus community have. So there are four buckets that I tend to put them in, and then a sort of catch-all at the end for things that don't quite fit there. First big bucket is academic distinction. I talk about this a lot. It's really important to me that Cornell be Cornell. We don't try to be Harvard. We don't try to be Stanford. We have wonderful things here at Cornell that only Cornell can do. And so I'm always thinking, when I think of academic distinction, one of the things I'm thinking of is distinctiveness or differentiator. What differentiates us? The other is distinguished. We have to be very distinguished in what we do. And so with that in mind, there are really a couple of priorities that I think we want to continue to pay attention to in the coming year to achieve academic distinction. The first is working with the provost to really further this radical collaborations initiative that he started even before I got here. I'm pushing him. I keep telling him, Mike, we can't just be radical. We've got to be really radical. So we really want to, I think, expand these areas so that they're not just, say, across the sciences, but they bring in the humanities. They bring in engineering. They bring in the arts. You know, really radical. And then I think we need to begin thinking about two or three, not a zillion, but a few additional areas that build on our unique strengths. How is this a differentiator for us? It's a differentiator for us because one of the things Cornell has going for it is this extraordinary breadth. We are, you know, we're an Ivy League school, but we're also a land-grant university. We're committed to core liberal arts, but we're also committed to professional education. We're maybe the one of two, so maybe also University of Pennsylvania, but very few places have world-class medicine and a world-class vet school. Mm-hmm. Almost no places have the level of liberal arts we have and then the level of agricultural education. There's so many things we can do if we build on that breadth. So that's one core goal. And then the other is working with Emmanuel Gianellis, who is our relatively new vice provost for research, to further grow our research portfolio, and in particular to diversify it. Funding in Washington is getting a little bit tight. We are not perhaps as diversified in terms of industrial sources, foundation sources, and so on as we might be. And of course, that leads then to distinction, because our faculty then have the resources they need to be best in the world. So that's the first category. The second category, which I continue to be really excited about, is educational innovation, or what I call educational verve. That is helping our faculty be open to innovation, be open to new ways of teaching, help our students be open to new ways of learning, but then taking a very serious, data-driven, evidence-based approach to deciding what we do and don't continue to do. The Center for Teaching Innovation opened, year and a half ago, under the direction of Julia Tomlevy, who's a professor of physics, and then hired an executive director, Matt Ouellette, from Wayne State. And frankly, I am blown away with the good work that they've gotten done in the past year. Professor Tomlevy is very understated. You don't see her out there beating her breasts and saying, oh yeah, we did all. Boy, they have done some remarkable things. Some of you, particularly our representative from LSNA, may know about the Active Learning Initiative. The Active Learning Initiative takes classes and it flips them. It helps faculty learn how to flip the classroom, which means the students do what we would normally get in a lecture. They do that out of class by reading or by watching a video. And then in class, they do hands-on challenging work. But as I say, we tried this, but then we also gathered data on it. And here's what they found in just one of the classes in which they did this, an introductory physics class. Not only did everybody do better, a little better, but the students from underrepresented minorities and under-resourced backgrounds did much better. Essentially, what this approach did was it closed the achievement gap. So it made it possible for all the students we bring in, very, very talented students, to compete in physics, which is an area in which often, if you haven't had a good preparation in high school, you can't succeed in college. We've just gotten a wonderful new gift from the Hansen family, a multi-million-dollar gift, and that's going to allow us to scale this up across the university. So this is one of these initiatives that it fits in educational verve, but it also fits in our sort of diversity bucket because it's helping students from under-resourced backgrounds. There's a big project to enhance our gateway courses, which are the very large courses that students from across the campus take. They're setting up an innovation greenhouse where faculty can try out new technology. I think it's really important when I talk about using technology to enhance teaching and learning, I'm not just talking about putting material online. I'm not just talking about MOOCs. I'm talking about things like peer-to-peer mentoring. I'm talking about things like faculty in large courses getting early warning systems so they know which students they should go and address. I'm talking about things like gamification, where you use the psychology of motivation to create assignments that students want to do, just like they want to play video games. So I think there's a lot going on there. We have hired three, the most recent in economics, what we call DBERs, discipline-based educational researchers. These are faculty members whose area of research is education. How do you teach economics better? How do you teach chemistry better? Again, I think it's a real testament to our faculty that they're open to this new line of faculty, and I think we want to do more of that. And then finally, in this educational verve area over the next year, we're going to be looking at eCornell. We're going to be looking at how we can bring eCornell more closely into Cornell, have it align better with what goes on at CTI and on campus, and also have it foster greater collaboration across our executive and professional education programs. So those are the programs for students who aren't Cornell students, they're students elsewhere. The third bucket, you know, I speak of it as civic responsibilities because I do think we have a set of civic responsibilities at the university. We have it's important for us to go out and defend the idea that not all ideas are equal, that you can evaluate ideas, that sometimes there are truths and sometimes there are hypotheses that have more weight than others. There's a very famous statement, and I should know who made it, and I can't remember, but it says that everyone is entitled to his own opinions, but not his own facts, her own opinions, facts. So I think that's something we have to do as a university. I think we have an important commitment to freedom of speech and freedom of expression that we have to uphold. But then a huge part of the civic responsibility bucket is our commitment to diversity and to being a more equitable and more inclusive community. Mm-hmm. It's one of the differentiators for this university, right? 1865, we've got Ezra Cornell saying, I would found a university for any person, regardless of their gender, regardless of their nationality, regardless of their race and ethnicity, regardless of their religion. Today we'd add regardless of their ability status, regardless of their sexual identity and orientation and so on. This is a differentiator. You know, and as I've said many times, we haven't always gotten it right, but we've been committed to it from our founding. So that's going to be a big focus, I think, throughout my presidency. I know everybody's waiting to hear about the outcome of the presidential task force recommendations. The task force recommendations are online. You can look at them. My leadership team and I have spent the summer going through them, assessing all of them, sort of putting, you know, sometimes there's similar variations. There's 120 or something recommendations, 112. But they're not all discrete. I mean, you can sort of, some of them overlap either within the same report or across reports. And a number of them, it turns out, are things we've already done where it's on us to do a better job. I mean, if somebody's recommending it and you've already done it, then you obviously haven't told a good enough story about it. So what we've been doing is looking at all of them and putting them into buckets. These are things we already have in place and we need to do a better job of getting out the information about it. These are things we are ready to do or already are doing. I can give you an example of that. Every freshman who's coming in next week is getting exposed to the Intergroup Dialogue Project, which is a wonderful program. It's actually one of the only programs for which there's hard empirical evidence that it improves people's ability to communicate across difference. So that's the second bucket, things we're going to do right away, or we're in process of doing. The third are things we're going to do in the first year. Then there's things, they're good ideas, but you know, you can't do everything at once. We just don't have the time or the resources, so we're committing to do them, but not in the first year. And then there's things that I think of as aspirational. They're very good ideas, but they will require significant resources, financial typically, and we, you know, we like the ideas, but we have to see if we can raise the funds for them. Within the first week to 2 weeks of the semester, I'll be sending out an email to everyone in the entire community saying, okay, here's our analysis. Go to the website. We're going to have a website where we list all the things we're doing in all those buckets, and there'll be dates on them, and there'll be explanation. Poor Joel is trying to put this all together for us. And over time, you know, as a measure of accountability, as we do new things, we'll pull them up. So I don't want to sort of scoop myself. We can talk a little bit about it, but it's, we've been doing a pretty detailed, substantial analysis. And then finally, One Cornell. The other task force, actually we intentionally didn't call it a task force, we called it a visioning committee. There was a faculty visioning committee that, to which I said last year, this isn't a task force. Don't think for the moment about financial constraints. Don't think about logistic constraints. Just dream. If you could think about what Cornell in New York City might look like in a decade, such that it complemented everything we're doing and will continue to do in Ithaca, what would it look like? And they came up with a really wonderful report. Where I have to be honest, we're a little bit slower getting to the detailed analysis of that because the presidential task force really consumed a lot of time. But we will be also responding to that publicly, maybe towards the end of September instead of the beginning. And we'll be engaging in some of the early recommendations they had, things like enhanced communication. And people just don't know everything that's going on and what the opportunities are. Some structured opportunities for more faculty interactions, and the beginning of some investigation of transportation and housing issues, which of course are kind of precursors to everything else. And then finally, in that last, either don't fit into the one of those buckets or fit in multiple of them, we are planning hard for Cornell Tech Phase 2. While Cornell Medicine has a whole bunch of initiatives, which I could talk with you about, but we're supporting them. There are a number of campus policies that need some cleanup. You know, last year we got the new consensual relations policy, which was extremely important to our students, particularly our graduate students, right? Mary and her team have been working on the needed revisions to 6.4 for faculty and staff, so they align with the earlier revisions. There's a handful of those we'll be working on, and then I did miss one. I was going to say, and of course, fundraising is always a priority for me, finding resources. I will mention one other. It does come out of the presidential task force, but I'm going to give you an early preview of this. One of the things that was recommended one way or another by at least two, if not all three of the subcommittees, was the creation of a strong campus-wide statement of our shared values. What is it that we as a university value? And you know, maybe you say, okay, that's just words, but actually having something to point to. I mean, I think most of us know, I bet if I went around the room, and I won't do this to you, I won't put you on the spot, but if I went around the room and asked you to give me three words that you thought embodied Cornell's value, I bet by the time we went around, we'd have 10 or 11. I mean, I think we know what those are, but having those, I think, will be really helpful, particularly in moments of crisis for us. So that's another important goal for me, to spearhead the creation of that. It's going to have to involve input it's going to be a campus-wide community set of values. We're going to have a small working group. I'm not doing another like major process by which we decide how 27, you know, we're not going to do that. We're going to pick a group of people. We're going to get probably nominees from the assembly, some people, and then that group will be responsible for going out and meeting with a lot of people. But I think it's going to be very important to have that. Okay. I will shut up now.
Well, thank you very much, President Pollack. I'd like to open the floor for questions from our group.
I have a question. Just following up on the Cornell Tech discussion, how would you envision incorporating Cornell Tech into our university assemblies realm, and specifically EA representation for Cornell Tech employees?
So as I understand it, right now the charter for the EA covers Ithaca and Geneva. I think it would, you know, one is going to have to talk with the Cornell staff to see what they want. I have to say my impression, having met with this group a lot and having been down there a lot, is they actually have a fairly disparate set of interests and questions. But if they're interested, you know, what I would suggest is someone here should talk to Mary about what the process is, and then you guys talk to them and figure out what they want to do and whether they want to come in, what's involved in changing the charter. I'm not opposed to it, but neither am I going to say to them, you know, you have to be part of the EA. Yeah.
Going back again, thank you for coming today. Going back to the presidential task force, is there anything that you could suggest to staff to help implement any of those, or do you maybe think it's a little too early?
Okay, that's a slightly different question than I thought you were going to ask me. So here's the thing. This is extraordinarily important, and we're telling the deans it's extraordinarily important. I also know that staff are extraordinarily busy, right? And the last thing I want is people to think, oh my God, there's 112 recommendations. You know, now how am I gonna ever sleep? One thing we are trying very hard to do is, as I say, to take these, to structure them. It's not really, it is 112, but those are sort of tactics.
Right.
And we're trying to make them into strategies. Another thing we're trying to do is we're trying to ensure that there is someone at a fairly senior level. It could be a dean, it could be someone in my office, you know, it could be a center director who has responsibility for all of them. And those people need to assure that as the staff are given extra assignments, other things are taken off their load. I am looking to hire a project manager at the core to help keep track of all this. It's a place where staff could go, presumably, if they had questions and concerns. An awful lot of what's recommended, if you think of the goal, so what's the goal? I mean, at a high level, it's very clear what the goal is. It's to have a more diverse community where, beyond having more diversity, the members of that diverse community all feel welcome, mm-hmm. all feel that they can, that they're going to thrive, without a naive sense that we're never going to have another ugly situation. Because we're part of the world. Bad stuff happens. So also that we know how to respond to that humanely and appropriately with support. If you look one level down, there are a number of new initiatives, but there's also a lot that is just about communication. It's about knowing what your opportunities are. So let me give you some examples of the sorts of things that have been recommended on the staff front. So I am going to scoop myself a little. But there are a number of recommendations about assuring that there's appropriate recognition for the work that staff do to support campus climate, things like awards. So one of the things we're going to do is we're going to look at, because there are a lot of awards already, what are the awards? Are there gaps in those awards? And then we're going to try and get the information out about what those are. One thing staff can do is pay attention to that and nominate each other for them, right? There were recommendations about things like we should have onboarding procedures for staffs. Well, we have very good ones that Vice President Opperman has worked on. So we need help communicating to people who haven't been through it. You know, look, this is what it, there's recommendations about diversity education programs for staff. Now, again, we're going to look to see where the gaps are. By the way, I haven't even seen this yet, but I know that there's a new, I wrote this down so I remember the name of it. There's a new podcast
that has just come out through the Inclusive Excellence Academy, which is supposed to be very, very good. I want to see that. So again, it's not a huge amount of extra work to just sort of become aware of these things and be able to talk about them. I think that will be one of the most important things staff can do to help.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yeah.
I have a question about outreach and engagement within the community, because, you know, last year a survey came out and it only wanted to hear about outreach done by staff if it was done in conjunction with Cornell students. Well, there are a lot of staffs. I mean, for example, I do outreach programming with sixth graders at the local middle schools. I bring a bunch of archaeological artifacts. We talk about the origins of writing at social studies classes. The kids are engaged. It's really fun. Nobody here at Cornell outside my department knows I do that, because it's not recognized, acknowledged. There's no way of even polling to see who's doing what. And I think, you know, Cornell isn't just faculty and students. Staff here do a lot. Yeah. All of us do in our jobs, and outreach is part of it for many of us. No, it's not my primary responsibility, but especially many of my colleagues at the Johnson Museum do a ton of outreach and very formalized program with the Discovery Trail. And I think there will be some way to sort of have the efforts of staff doing this really be highlighted, because
that's a really good suggestion. I appreciate, first of all, thank you for doing that, because I think our connection with the local community is incredibly important. And secondly, you can see she's taking notes here, because I think that is very important. We should both do the survey, and we should have communication.
Oh, absolutely. My portfolio includes community relations as well as communications. And I'm so glad you raised that, because admittedly, we're very good at talking about how our students engage in the greater community and how our faculty. But I'm loving what I'm hearing.
This sounds like a good story.
Oh, absolutely.
Please connect with
So there's not just that, but your fellow assembly member who works for community relations.
Okay.
We'll definitely take up that idea and move it forward, because that's exactly the type of story we want to be telling. So thank you.
That's a really good suggestion. Thank you.
Hi. I'd just like to recognize and thank you for your help. When you first came on board to Cornell University, joined DeStefano, addressed the CIT town hall, and I was able to ask her a question and said, of all the things that IT staff can do on campus, what is the number one priority of the president? And it was like, go to the cloud, be most secure. How do we compare versus our Ivy League peers? And the answer was, make this the best place for the faculty and the students.
Great.
And with that answer, that has made my life in meetings a lot easier, because that's a really good common denominator for, should we build this and put effort into it, and who is it really going to serve? And every time we get to a tough point, I bring that back out and say, hey, how should we move forward? Is this going to make a difference? And then this year, I'm actually working on something that impacts and helps out stuff in the classroom. So
what are you working on?
There's a service called AppStream using Amazon technology to deliver applications through a web browser to the classroom.
Oh, great.
So it allows like lecture halls, everybody can bring in a computer and use applications that normally they'd have to go to a computer lab for
doing.
So
yeah.
It's sort of changing the way that students can learn and professors can teach. So it's something brand new, but we've done it a couple of years already and had really good results. So thank you for making that part really easy, because that was a very concise directive to go with.
Oh. Well, thank you. You should, however, be glad that you know. You know how like the worst patients are doctors. So I'm a computer scientist. You don't want to be my IT scientist. Because you know we think we know, but we don't really. Anything else? Yeah.
So I have a question. Yeah. Just going back to your key priorities as you described them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see, like, staff's current staff situation? Do we have what it takes to help you support these priorities? Where are we?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a really good question, and it's essentially impossible for me to answer in the abstract, because each of these priorities filters throughout, or almost all of them filter out throughout almost all of the branches of the campus. So when I talk about academic distinction, right, what makes a project in the vet school academically distinctive is very different from what makes a project in anthropology, is very different from what makes an exhibit in the museum or makes a library collection. And so one of the remarkable things about a university, I mean, here we are in this centrally isolated small town, and we have this staff with extraordinary breadth of expertise. And so when you ask me, do you have what it takes? My sense is as in any good organization, and I think we are a good organization, the overwhelming majority of the staff does have what it takes. And in any small pocket, there's going to be an occasional staff who's not performing, and you know, they have to up their game. But you know, I don't know how to answer that any more specifically than that. Mary, you're
no, I agree. I think there are some generic things that we know we all need to continue to learn as the student population and the staff and the faculty become more diverse in many ways. Are we regularly reskilling and upskilling ourselves to work as well as we can and as effectively as we can with differences we may not have experienced before? So that's something I think we all can continue, should continue to do. And that's part of what the Inclusive Excellence Academy is trying to provide us options for.
You know, I might add one more thing, which plays off a conversation Hey, and Pilar and I were having before we all sat down. The older I get, and I'm pretty old by now, the more convinced I am that, I mean, there's different people in different areas will have different skills that make them successful. And, you know, Christopher needs tech skills, which somebody else might need. But every person I know who's successful shares one skill, and that is an openness to change. And not being afraid of change and being willing to try things and fail and try again. Faculty, by the way, and I say this as a faculty member, we're not always so good about change, right? I have to tell my joke. When I was interviewing for the president's job, I told the joke, which is, how many faculty members does it take to change a light bulb? Change? But it's true. I mean, I think that's human nature, right? People don't like change. So the one thing I would say when you say, do we have what it takes? I think if you're open, because the world is changing every day, and the more open you are to change, the more you're going to be able to help us achieve our goals.
Here's a quiet.
Great. Well, again, it's hard for me to imagine. I know you have really busy jobs and then you do this as well. So I just want to thank you. I love the staff at Cornell. Really
great. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us
here. Nice to see you.
Good to see you. Have a great day.
Bye.
Then when we leave, they take away our names.
They take away
names.
They do.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
So we will now continue with the meeting. The first thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes from our last session, which was on June 6th, right before we started summer session. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second.
The minutes are approved. And on a personal note, I want to thank everybody that was at the retreat last Friday. What a great day. I mean, the energy, the ideas that came forward, putting out, you know, it was fantastic. And I really personally felt that it was a great opportunity to connect with each of you on a different level at the meeting. And I'm looking forward to more opportunities to do things like that. And one of the suggestions that came out of the retreat was, hey, we should consider doing a mid-year retreat as well. I think that's a fantastic idea. And it can help us kind of recalibrate where we're going for the remainder of the year, kind of assess what we've done to that point and move forward. Before I apologize also, I have to leave for graduate student interviews here in about 5 minutes, but before we turn it over to our other guests who have joined us today, I'd like to note that on the box, Cornell box, for those of you that have not had an opportunity to look at that, I encourage you to do so. That should be an active place for us to share information. Mm-hmm. And so regularly, just set that as kind of a every other day or every couple of days, check Cornell box for the employee assembly. And some of the things that you'll find in there that are recent updates, each one of the butcher block papers that everybody had put sticky notes on, suggestions, ideas for the committees and so forth, those have all been uploaded onto the box.
so that we don't lose those thoughts and those ideas. Mm-hmm. Also, Hey did a great job. I don't know if it was remarkable, but it was a great job of putting together all the evaluation comments from after the retreat with each of the questions, things that folks felt went well, things that we might be able to improve on going forward. So I'd encourage you to take a look at those. Lastly, the Employee Assembly Committee assignments, there is a document on the box. It's not accurate. That was me taking folks' names that had written onto the butcher blocks and just plugging them in. But Pilar is, as our internal operations, is going to get that squared away so that each individual knows where they're at, what they're going to be focused on, and so forth. So if I could turn the meeting over to you, Hey, and to Maria and Seth, thank you both for being here today. We appreciate it. And I hope you all have a great day.
Thanks. So we have two representatives from the organizational development team, Maria and, Seth. So they're going to help us with the presentation, and there'll be time for questions. Really feedback that everybody has provided, and Craig and I are going to take active steps to kind of get people in here to present on topics that I think would be very important. So far, we have Paul Streeter on the calendar for October 3rd, so that'll be an interesting time for him to present on the budget and answer questions that we have. And I know Craig is actively working to get somebody from HR Benefits to kind of come in and do a presentation and answer some questions. I think those were two topics that we assessed were very important throughout our retreat. So. As you get ideas, feel free to come to me with them, and then I'll try to connect and get those on the calendar as well. So thank you all. So with that, I turn this over to Maria and Seth.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, attendance. How do we do that? Sorry, this is my first
time. Okay, that's fine.
We have to call roll and
sorry. I've never done this before. Okay, so roll call.
But we can do it after Maria.
Yeah,
it's just
okay.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There. You can stay there. Are you first?
No.
Okay. Hi. I'm Maria Wolf, and I am from the Office of Organizational Development and Talent Management. And so my primary role at the university is really focused on talent management and succession planning. So I wanted to Seth and I wanted to come and share with you some of the new tools and resources that we have out for individuals who are interested in developing their own career. And so I thought I'd walk through a little bit of sort of what our toolkit is and our sort of approach to career development, and then share some of the tools with you that you may or may not be familiar with already. So at Cornell, our office has really, and I would say all of human resources, has really tried to make sure that people understand as individuals that work at Cornell that 80% of your career development is on you as the driver. So we sort of broke it down into an 80-10-10 or an 80-20 rule, in that 80% is on the individual, and then 10% is on the manager, and another 10% is on the organization in terms of offering, creating a framework that allows people to develop the way they want to, and allows people to advance in ways that they want to at Cornell, if that's what they're looking for. So we realized that we were saying 80-20 for a long time, and we were sort of failing in the area of the 10% that was on the organization, in terms of creating a framework, tools, resources for people to actually use to help develop their career in whatever way they want. So the expectation is that people will sort of think about, that you all would figure out what you want to do, what kind of development you want. Talk to your manager. Your manager has a responsibility then, or you as managers have responsibilities to really support, be supportive. And that may look like saying, yes, I think you're ready for the next best thing, so I'm going to help you get there. Or it may look like, you're maybe not quite there yet, and so let's figure out together what you can focus on to get from where you are to where you want to be. So we're working with managers in terms of developing trainings to help support them around coaching and development when they work with their staff. And we have developed some tools and resources for individual success as well to help with that. So, hey, all right. So basically, here's our career management toolkit. Have any of you seen this or are any of you familiar with this online? A few. Okay. Do you send this out, the presentation out to people after we're done?
I will.
You can. You can. Yeah. Okay. So the link down at the bottom is hot. So I just wanted to let you know. You can click on that and we'll take you to our web presence, which is pretty impressive. And I can say that because I didn't build it. One of my colleagues did. She did a great job. But it really walks through these five steps in the career management toolkit with resources and tools attached to every step. But I wanted to give you just a brief overview of sort of what's in each area. So the first part is really learning about yourself. Performance management, 360 feedback. There's a bunch of information out there about that kind of thing and how to get feedback if you're looking for it. So you can kind of figure out what you may need to or you may want to focus on in terms of development and some we'll give you some ideas in terms of what you may want to explore in terms of different types of positions, etc. So that's out there. And then Workday. So who's looked around the new Workday? Okay. Have you seen or checked out the career, talent, and performance little worklet? Anybody clicked on that? So awesome. You guys need to go there. Okay, so we're going to take you there, but on your own, I would recommend you explore it too. What HRIS and Workday did was to combine a bunch of different, those three topics that I think used to be their own separate icon. So that's, it's like a one-stop shopping now. So for performance, anything career or talent related, it's all within this worklet. So you just have to click one place and it's right there. And let's go there. And we'll look at it. Yeah. Well done. Thanks, Sam. So while they're getting there, the newest addition to this, we've had most of this stuff has been in existence and on the HR website and in different places across the Cornell website. But what we wanted to do was create this one-stop shop for everybody. So it includes information around, so if you go, and it includes information around jobs, looking for jobs that are posted. There we go.
So a couple months ago, there was a new, we had an opportunity to redesign the homepage of Workday, and what we found out through focus groups and data that we had access to was that most people's homepages were very cluttered. There was a lot of links on there, individual icons to areas deep within Workday. Some had over 24. So what we wanted to do was collapse some of those. And one of the areas that we looked at was career talent performance. So we took pieces and just kind of brought them under one umbrella. They're still there the way you used to be able to get to them, but this should just be an easier way to navigate to those. And even though this isn't part of the presentation, we also did one for managers, my team management. So if you're a manager, there are a lot of tools there. Please go in and check that one out. So here we have various links that are just teasing up things within Workday and actually outside of Workday as well. Up at the top, we have announcements that we're going to keep those fresh. So new things that are going on, whether it's events, maybe tools you haven't heard about before, we're going to be starting to promote those up there. On the left-hand side, your career. This is where you can look to find jobs, manager applications. And in the next section, in the middle, tools for you, these are some of the things that are outside of Workday that HR offers and the university offers. So a link to see you learn. That is another area that is under the strategic advisement of my area. So if you haven't been into see you learn, Saba recently, take a look and see what kind of training is out there. There's tons of links to Career Navigator. You've probably heard of that one in the past, and you're probably been on that. It's a great way to figure out what are all the jobs at Cornell and what do they mean and how do I get there. Below that, we have the goals. If you have inputted your goals into Workday, they're popping right here, easy for you to see, easy for your managers. We have about 3,500 staff who inputted about almost 10,000 goals for this fiscal year. So it's being used, there's conversations being had about it. It's a great way to kind of take a step back and think, what is it that I want to accomplish, both in your current job, but maybe you know, a future job that you're working towards. Performance and goals, about the performance dialogue, and then a quick way to get into your goals so you can add, update them, update the statuses. And then below that, learning through doing, some information about development opportunities and how you can find those. So this link will take you right to the development opportunities that are posted. Yeah. And then there is another recent change.
Well, while you're working on that, I'll just talk a little bit about the stuff that's there, and then we can go see it. So the learn through doing, the experiential development opportunities, is new. We know that this kind of thing has been happening, experiential development has been happening organically across the organization for years. But we didn't have a one-stop, I'm gonna stop using that term, a platform for everyone to access. And so certain people were able to access development opportunities through their networks, depending on what kinds of positions they had, what kinds of connections that they had across the university. But other people didn't even know what they were. And actually, does everybody know what I'm talking about? Experiential learning or just development opportunities? Yeah, okay, so the hands-on learning, that could range anywhere from an informational interview that would take like 45 minutes to an hour one time, or a job shadow that could take a couple hours over an extended period of time, to special projects, working on a committee, or you know, doing a full-blown, full immersion job rotation for a certain number of months, or weeks, or a year or two, even facilities does that. In any case, we wanted to make sure that everyone had access to these opportunities, so that people could effectively advocate for their own career development. So the idea really is that we go, can we go back there or no?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. If we go, so there are two ways that this site works, the learning while doing. One is that you, as you can go, like Seth said, click on the link and it will take you to these development opportunities that are already posted. So we've done some soliciting of opportunities from departments and units and colleges, although it's a sort of a revolving door, because once those opportunities are out there, people can just apply for them right away. And once they've selected someone to fill that position or to come and do that development opportunity, they are off they're off the grid. So right now we have six. Some are a bit longer term than others, which is why some of these have been out here for quite a while. The hope is that we'll get more shorter term, less commitment kinds of opportunities for people to gain, to help build skills, to help gain exposure to other areas of campus, help, you know, provide opportunities for individuals to sort of talk to other people to get an idea of what they do day to day for a job that they think maybe they might be interested in. And basically what you do is, would you mind clicking on one sec? So if we look at, so the way it works is that there's a job description. It's pretty short, and it lists, then below the summary, it'll talk about the type of skill sets that are gonna be developed. Any sorts of skill sets that should be, that the person seeking this opportunity should potentially have. And then talks a little bit about the logistics, how frequently it needs to happen, sort of what the time frame is, et cetera. And then if you go down even, oh, actually, I think it's up, you can hit apply. There's a little button that you hit. If it looks interesting to you and you want to, you know, connect with the hiring manager, so you can hit apply. And I think you can hit apply. Would you mind? Thank you. great. So it takes you, it gives a little bit, so it, a couple of things. It goes to anything that you have it, that's in the system already. I didn't realize it had this. You can opt to include your resume if you're applying for this or not, or in a cover letter or not. But really, if you scroll down just a little bit, Seth, there's a questionnaire there. So you can select, you can choose to upload in that area. But then this is the area that that anyone interested in participating in one of these needs to fill out. So it's really brief. It's answering questions around why you would like to participate in this opportunity, what you're hoping to gain from it, whether or not you've talked about it with your manager, and then what some kind of a time commitment that you're able to, or you think you could probably commit to. What's nice about these is that they're very flexible. So if you, if people go on here and they see something that looks like it might be too much of a time commitment, but it looks really interesting, I would encourage you or them to go ahead and connect with the manager that's offering the opportunity, because a lot of times there is quite a bit of leeway in terms of time, in terms of commitment during a week or a day. So it shouldn't get in anybody's way in terms of applying. Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
So those job opportunities, are they sort of at one band? Is there an opportunity to learn what does it mean to be a manager? What does it mean to be the director of a department? Are those sorts of opportunities also available within this job rotation?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, one of the ways that we really encourage people to get that supervisory experience, or at least find out if they're interested in being a supervisor, is to host one of these experiential development opportunities. So that's one way of doing it. A lot of people end up doing that because they then are responsible for training that person and sort of being their go-to. So they do get a little bit of hands-on experience in terms of managing. We also do have, so there's a little video out there that I won't make you watch right now, but it sort of talks about the different kinds of experiential learning, or the two, I guess, different focuses for experiential learning or development, excuse me. One is to develop different skill sets in specific areas, and the other is to get some more leadership management kind of exposure. So absolutely, they're all bands, they're all different kinds of positions. We include union positions as well. People from the union are encouraged to also participate. So there's really no, there aren't any parameters that we're working within that would exclude anybody or any jobs. Yeah. Yeah.
So I did look at these development opportunities on my own previously, and I actually had a note here that I wanted to talk about them with the EA at some point, because they're actually a little concerning to me. They brought up some concerns, so I'd like to address those with you.
Sure.
So a lot of the opportunities that are listed are full-time positions. Mm-hmm. So if you're in your current position, you're going to be leaving your department shorthanded if you're working full-time, if you're busy. So that's kind of like a logistical, like, how does that work?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also kind of concerning If you're trying to explore a higher career opportunity, you're going into this position and you're basically doing the job. How are you compensated for that? Are you compensated at your regular salary level? Are you compensated at a level comparative to the job that you're doing during this time period? And then there was like a couple that just seemed like maybe they should be for an intern. Like there's a summer rush at the help desk that was listed and it's like, are you just trying to get free labor out of us? Like they were a little concerning to me.
Thank you. Those are all great questions. So I'll try to remember every single one of them and you might need to remind me if I don't answer all of them. So to get at the shorthandedness and the fact that the ones that are listed up here are more of a full-time immersion sort of situation, that's why they're up here still. So most of the shorter term positions, once they're posted, people jump on them and then they disappear. So those are more challenging to fill for sure, or to get someone to participate. Most of them, I think, that are listed up there that are the full immersion come with funding. So the idea really is that, yes, that person would actually leave their home department and go work for however long to gain experience and exposure to that sort of position. There is no change in salary in terms of amount. However, the funding source changes that way. So a lot of times what happens, it's the easiest in terms of the system, is the home department will continue to pay that person's salary, but the host department that's offering the opportunity would then reimburse the other department. So that in terms of those longer term immersions, generally there is funding attached. And that also allows the department some flexibility in terms of how they're going to get that work done for the person that's gone. So if they want to hire a temp, if they want to hire another experiential development, or they present another experiential development opportunity to get the work done, there's quite a bit of flexibility there when you have funding attached, right? And so for those longer term, full-time immersions, that's what we would expect, is that there would be something, because it's a long period of time for someone to be gone. It doesn't always happen. Some managers are very supportive of their people being gone for a while, and then the rest of the team sort of steps up and does the work, and it's not as big of an issue, but that doesn't happen for everybody. Okay, so does that answer that question for you? Okay, what was the other one?
just that stuff. There was a job opportunity that was posted that was like for a help desk for a summer rush.
Oh yeah, thank you.
And it was like,
yeah,
kind of like maybe you should be asking for volunteers and not trying to boasted as like a career development opportunity.
So it's funny. I mean, you probably wouldn't be interested in that. However, there are people that work with Workday quite a bit in their jobs, and sometimes they want to learn more about how the system works and learn more about the problem solving side of things. And so for some people, it is actually development. So really, it's really about the individual and what they're looking for. And like I said, there aren't any rules about the opportunities that can be posted up there. And I want to say that was filled, right? You have somebody that's helping with that summer rush stuff. Yeah. So there was somebody out there that wanted to do it.
We got several people.
Yeah.
4 or 5.
Yeah. So it really just depends. So you'd be surprised that sometimes you'll look out there and you're like, who in the world would want to do that? But people will. Some people do. Yeah.
Just to add to that, some of our custodians have seen that as a development opportunity.
Absolutely.
Where there's so much stigma associated with it. It's like, oh, they're just a custodian.
Yeah.
And they can't possibly do it, which just infuriates me beyond belief. But a lot of times, this is that experiential learning. And it may not seem a lot for people that are on a different career path, but it's been an incredible opportunity for people to get experience beyond what unfortunate box they're placed in.
Following up on Ellen's question that you addressed, so what if the team is very, very small?
Yes.
And you're leaving to go do an experiential learning opportunity, creates a void that can't be filled by somebody stepping in to do your job.
Yeah.
the idea that these resources are available, we all can know about them, but there's it seems that there are probably situations where all staff will not be able to participate and take advantage of these. And do you have any advice or thoughts on how to navigate that? If the idea is, I'd love to take advantage of one of these.
Yeah, and that's a difficult piece. And I might refer back to Christy because I know that she's had a lot of experience with this, but I'll take a stab at it myself. So first of all, it's really going to be the first step is really having the conversation with your manager. And if there are opportunities out there that you'd like to pursue, and you have a two-person team and it doesn't look like you could do exactly what it's asking for in terms of time, there are ways to there are many different opportunity or there are many different managers who are offering these or departments who are offering these that'll be open to lots of different ways to do it, right? So there's that piece. And I would say that, development, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but in an office of a couple, do they ever get to do any development, or is it just one of those things that they just, sorry, you're in an office of two people and then you can't do anything. You can't go to a conference, you can't go to a training.
I think that there are those opportunities. But
okay.
It's, this model of career development is new and it's
yes.
And it's exciting. And it seems, especially with the breadth of staff opportunities around campus,
mm-hmm.
that trying to make it as accessible in an equitable fashion, at least when we talk about it, so
yeah.
that. And I think you answered it in the first part, that
okay.
You just have to find a creative way to make it work for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it's about. It's about managers being open and not just deciding right away that they're not going to, engage in any kind of discussion around it.
Right.
And it's about the staff person really being realistic about how the office is set up, how work is done, and what they could realistically manage without creating a burden or a hardship for the department itself. And we've seen it happen in lots of different, very impressive, innovative ways, so that people really can get that development. Because the last thing we want is for someone to be able to go out there and see all these great opportunities they want to take advantage of and not have any ability to do that. Yeah. And some of it is going to be in the form of training and working with managers to help them understand things in a different way and help them be able to coach for development. In a way that is really beneficial for both parties. I saw a hand.
Oh, yeah. Just another question about them.
Sure.
Are these opportunities set up specifically for this program, or are these job openings that are, open in these departments? Because when you read the description of them, it seems like it's a full-on, job description.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if these are they're actual open positions, or these are just a sub kind of position that's created for this development opportunity?
They're created just for the development opportunity. So on the Workday page, if you go to whatever the page is, where there's find a job, below that there's find a development opportunity as a tab. So they are separate. And the intent is not to have these be full-time jobs forever. Yeah. Yeah.
How long has this availability been out there?
Last month, it rolled out.
Okay, so it's pretty new.
It's new, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we have been working with each college and unit to get the communication out. So there's a high possibility that you haven't gotten any communication.
Right.
Well,
my question was,
yeah.
What is the role of the individual college HR
mm-hmm.
department in A, disseminating information about this, and B, promoting the opportunity and helping facilitate the opportunity, perhaps for staff members
yeah.
whose managers aren't? So is there a role for college HR departments?
Yes, there is a role. And in fact, there's a title for the role. It's called a talent lead. So each college and unit, yours, Lisa Rose, for ILR, yeah? Do you ILR? Yeah. So every college and unit has identified a talent lead, but we're talking
what we're calling a talent lead. And so that's really the talent point person that is the go-to for these kinds of things and other things talent related. So basically they're there to help. They actually populate the opportunities that your college, for example, if ILR came up with a bunch of opportunities, they would then go to Lisa, who might delegate the upload to Tanya. But in any case, it would be going through HR, and HR will play whatever role you need them to play in terms of helping to facilitate, giving guidance around, you know, how to
and actually getting out the information that this exists.
That's the goal.
Okay.
Yep.
But Maria, just to, yeah. You guys did do like a trial with human resources. You did rotational experiences to try to tweak it and see how it worked.
We did. We did a pilot,
right?
Which did not include ILR, but we did a pilot with CBM and Human Ecology and a Student Campus Life, a couple other places. So those people happen to be a little bit more familiar with it. But yes, so hopefully communication will start to happen with that. But yes, that is the role of the talent lead. Yep. Question? Another question?
Okay. I have a question, unless somebody else does.
Yeah, please.
Sorry, I'm like the voice from far away.
I know.
This is Carrie, by the way, from University Communications. I was just curious, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious about the level of manager training and the messaging, I guess, because, you know, like Gina mentioned, I'm also from a small department and it's a very supportive department, but to me personally, it would be hard to broach that subject if I wanted to go and do something especially long-term that would put my department in sort of a pinch. And so I'm wondering, A, if the training or whatever you're calling it for managers or supervisors is going to be mandatory. And what is the vibe, you know, like let's embrace change, let's go for it. Like what are the managers being asked to do? As far as supporting these kinds of opportunities?
Yes. So I don't know if I need to look at you. Can you see me?
It's okay. I'm listening.
Okay. Good. So the training for managers is really around coaching, around for development overall. So it's not necessarily specific just to these sorts of development opportunities. It's just really helping managers learn how to be better coaches in terms of performance, in terms of development, and having them be supportive and really giving productive feedback. So saying no and not having a follow-up conversation is what we want to get away from. That's one of the goals. So I think that we have probably all been here long enough to know that nothing is mandatory or required at Cornell, but we're offering this particular training is going to be available online 24/7 for managers with, I think, a lab component attached to it so that people learn sort of the basics, the fundamentals online on their own time, and then they come to a more of a lab classroom type setting where they can actually practice and do some hands-on work around the coaching piece. So I don't know what our time frame is for release for that.
Soon.
Hopefully
this fall.
But yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's not everybody can do exactly maybe what is listed or advertised out there. However, we are really hoping that managers, and we're trying to, you know, we haven't had a way to hold managers accountable or responsible really for doing this. Many managers are very supportive and they figure out a way to make it work. Some are unfortunately not, and we're almost out of time. So I would say that we could talk a little bit more about this offline in terms of specifics to you, if you want to contact me.
Oh, yeah, I was more just thinking of myself as a sort of one example of a type of worker at Cornell and how people might feel broaching the subject, with their supervisors, especially if we don't know if our supervisors even know this exists. I think one thing that we hear a lot of, within the EA is that there are a lot of staff that that probably would take advantage of some of these benefits, this being one of them. But there are lots of different benefits that the university offers that are great and that staff members would love to take advantage, but almost everything is at supervisor's discretion. And that's one of these pain points that some people feel because, you know, they might be doing the same exact job, they might be doing a great job, but just that, you know, the supervisor is the variable that either opens doors for you or doesn't. And so, you know, it's just an interesting dynamic, I guess. But this sounds great. I really appreciate it.
It is, and thank you. And so one of the other things that I think will be helpful is that we have what's called a talent profile, and I will make sure that you all get it, but it's basically an individual development plan that is we're working with Seth's group to figure out how Workday can send that out to everybody. So the expectation is that throughout the year, everybody is going to be having a development conversation with their managers, and that will help hopefully incentivize managers to actually be a little bit more open than maybe some of them have been before in terms of working creatively to make sure people are getting to do what they want to in terms of development. Okay, so you want to show something?
Yeah, before we run out of time. So there's two new areas in Workday I want to make you aware of. One is career interest. This is a place where you can say, so I'm logged in a different tenant as Amy. She's interested in a development opportunity. She looked out there, she didn't see one that fit her needs, but she identified herself as she's interested and what she's interested in. And those talent leads mm-hmm. have access to this.
Yes.
So if you don't see anything posted, I think it's really important that we also have from the ground up people saying, I am interested in development opportunities and this is what I'm interested in.
Yep.
The other area is job interest. So not a development opportunity, the actual jobs. In here, you can identify what jobs you are interested in. How did Amy get here? She might know just through experience what job she's interested in. So she's gone in there and identified some job profiles. Maybe she's used Career Navigator and she figured out some interesting things that she's interested in. But once she's identified those under open jobs, if there's something posted, it's right there. So it's kind of like her working checklist. She can go in, continually look at it and see, oh wait, something has opened up and click in that and go right to the application page. But maybe she's also not sure about all the other opportunities. And so there is something new called the opportunity graph. And I'm really excited about this one because it really shows the power of Workday. We've had Workday for 5.5 years. What this is doing is it's looking at, she's a consultant advisor specialist. And so it's looking at what happened to all the other consultant advisor specialists in the last 5.5 years. Where did they transfer? Where did they promote to? And so through this, she can see that there's been quite a lot of different kinds of movement, maybe not necessarily in her job profile, her progression, or her job family, but she can look and take a look and see that there are all these other kind of movements that people at the university have. So it's kind of helped to demystify what does movement look like at the university. And if there's one that she wants to learn more about, clicks into it, it has the description, some information about what are the requirements of that job. And then she can also see that there's actually a job posted here already for this one. So she can just click into that and go right into the application page. We're starting to get the word out on this. This is brand new. There'll be more communications in September around this, but feel free to take this back to your areas and let people know.
Thank you.
Okay, me too.
Okay.
You're right,
we're
on
all
the, you were right on the money. It's 1:30 on the dot.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay, so I will have to do a roll call. So I'm just going to call out your name if you're here to say present. Peggy Anderson. Christopher Barth. Marcy Benda. Andrew Brooks.
Here.
Tariq Chams.
Here.
Christopher Dawson. We've got Kevin Fitch, not here. Tanya Rowe.
Here.
Andrea Hamlin Mott.
Here.
Thank you. David Heiner.
Here.
Arlo Horrigan.
Here.
Adam Howell.
Here.
We've got Karen Loparco.
She was here.
Okay. Christine Mahoney.
Here.
Ellen Miller.
Here.
Okay. Bruce Rubble.
Bruce was here.
Yeah.
I was?
Yeah. Herb Sheldon.
Nope.
Ann Zvierding. Kelly Vaccaro.
No, she quit. Sorry. She's no longer on there.
Jeremy Cruiser is not here. And Catherine Tran is not here. So I think I have Pam Pilar, Gina, Nancy, and Craig was here. So with this, should I call an adjournment or? So with this, I motion to call an adjournment early before we can review, unless you want to review new business. Is there any new business?
No, I'm just seconding.
Okay, just seconding. Okay. So with that, I adjourn this meeting. Thank you all for all your participation.
And remember, I'll reach out to you about the committees. We're ironing out a few things within the system for the Office of Assemblies, and then we'll slowly go through and populate everything out.
Okay.
I printed out this these committee assignments, but these are not the committee assignments.
No, that's your interest. I'm gonna have to go through and file them all. There was also some misinformation on that as well. So Bruce is not on the assembly. So I'll reach out to individuals because that was a little bit confusing the document.
Oh,
okay.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And I gotta reach out to Tanya.
But
you
yes, ma'am.
Did you miss the retreat?
So
yep.
In my case.